What's up, Yap Squad, and welcome back. We've got another re-yap, or recap, we like to call it re-yap, of the Acolyte episodes 3 and 4. So we're gonna, I have a lot of thoughts about this episode. I don't know about you, Sawyer, about these episodes. So we're gonna talk about them. We've got a great guest, but some housekeeping stuff, just a reminder that in 2 days, on Wednesday, the 26th of June, we are hosting the very first ever, I don't know if it's the very first ever, but first for us.
I think it is.
I'm going to say it is. The inaugural Star Wars Spelling Bee. We're going to have a really great panel of contestants, and we're going to be raising money for a great cause, because it's still Pride Month, and we got to support our gays, you know. It's been a long week, y'all. I'm tired. We're recording this on a Friday. I'm ready to go to bed, but I want to talk about Star Wars first. Sawyer, you got any updates for us? Any news?
No, I don't think so. Just be there or be square on Wednesday. It's going to be a party. We have some amazing creators from all across the Star Wars galaxy joining us. And we are partnering with Wookiepedia for this event, which is something we were really hoping for, but weren't sure would clear, but it did. And I'm super excited for that. So Wookman, otherwise known as Jordan, will be joining us as the guest judge for the Spelling Bee, which is really cool.
That's like
everybody loves Wikipedia. Everybody uses Wikipedia. People who aren't like hardcore Star Wars fans use Wikipedia.
Including like actors and like writers, mm-hmm. and directors. I can't remember if it was Leslie Headlin, but someone recently mentioned that they used Wikipedia before. I think it was Leslie Headlin. I feel like she said she used Wikipedia before she was able to like meet with Dave Filoni and like all the like Lucasfilm people. And I'm like, amazing. Incredible. Yeah. But I think that's it. Let's get right into our discussion.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you, guys.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go, please. Take it away.
No, we have a wonderful guest and a very a longtime friend of mine joining us today. Kat, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, Catherine LaSalle. I don't have a stage name. Maybe I should. But yes, YouTuber, also fellow podcaster, but your guys' podcast is way more legit than mine. I feel like this is such an honor and a privilege, and I'm so excited. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah.
Cool.
So let's talk about it. Let's get right into it. First impressions, spoiler-free thoughts. You know, we'll go into spoiler territory pretty soon here, but just to start.
I'm on cloud freaking 9, y'all, because as much as I love all of the Disney Plus live action shows, I've been so thirsty for some new territory, uncharted waters, new characters, new faces, new things to theorize about, you know, plugging new things into beyond what we already know the confines of the Star Wars universe to be. There's so much more beyond all that. So spoiler free thought is, I love that there's so much mystery and so much more to be curious about right now. And just, I love the newness. It's fresh. It's new. Again, that's not to dismiss everything that we've gotten up to this point, but I'm just excited that we're all in uncharted territory right now. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I had a similar thought the other day. I mean, I love all of the Disney Plus shows. I'm pretty easy to please when it comes to Star Wars. I'm easygoing. I'm like, normally I watch something and I'm like, yeah, I liked that. That was good. And I think a lot of people going into this show were like, this has to be like Acolyte, or not Acolyte, Andor level good, blah, blah, blah. And as good as Andor was, like, I loved it. I found myself not making a lot of content talking about it because I felt like I didn't have much to add other than like, wow, it's so good. But the Acolyte now, like, this is the first show in a while that I've been like really excited to discuss and theorize and like dissect characters and stuff. So, and I think part of it has to do with them being, most of the characters being brand new to us, if not all of the characters except for a few that, you know, caused people to get upset. But
happy birthday, Ki-Adi-Mundi.
Anyway, I feel like we don't know where these characters end up. Like, we know where Cassian Andor ends up, and we know where Anakin ends up. We know where a lot of these characters, we kind of know like the end of their journey, so it feels less like wanting to theorize about things. So I'm very
Nestra,
right? Me too, man.
Yeah, that's been interesting to see people's. I should admit up front, I am only just now an infant into my journey of the High Republic, which I feel like a fool. I'm so salty that I've been like sleeping on it this whole time because I realized like how ignorant I've been, like begging for new, fresh Star Wars content. Yet here it is in these High Republic books. So I've only literally just started Light of the Jedi, but it's been interesting. I want to keep reading to see more of Vernestra in her childhood, because seemingly, and you guys are probably more in tune than I am, but seemingly her portrayal here, not that it contradicts, but I've seen commentary regarding like having been so immersed in the Jedi Order for as long as she has been, that it's really coming through. But she's such a dynamic, having not read the books at all, I can still sense there's so much going on for her, and I want more of her because it is so intriguing. It's like she's kind of representative of the, I'm not going to say corruption, that's not the correct word, but the kind of core, the foundation of towing the line of what's right and what's wrong with the Jedi Order and how far they can really take things. Like, I don't know, I'm curious to hear more from you guys. Your guys' eyes lit up when I talk about her childhood. Yeah, no. So.
I mean, I think it's so wonderful. I mean, I don't think you're ever too late to start reading Star Wars books, and that's never a too world late. That I wasn't really exposed to until I started making content, and that opened so many new doors for me and a whole different world of storytelling in the Star Wars universe that, in my opinion, is just as vivid, if not even more colorful sometimes than what we see on screen. And so it makes me excited when people are saying that they're just now getting into the High Republic books and comics, because there is a very dedicated High Republic community that I feel grateful to be a part of, but to have more friends and more people that I meet finally going, oh wait, what is this? Like, for some it was last year with Jedi Survivor, and that got people interested in the High Republic, and now we have the Acolyte, and for them to choose, we talked about this a little bit last week, but for them to choose Vernestra, who is such a beloved character in the High Republic, and she plays such a pivotal role in phase one and in phase three, it was definitely a very intentional choice, but we're not quite sure, you know, there are still pieces missing of her story, and I think they're gonna be fleshed out more, and I'm really excited to find out what those reasons were that they felt so strongly about her being. Granted, there were a little bit of limitations with, like, a lot of the characters in the High Republic are human, and obviously they wouldn't have lived that long. But Vernestra wasn't the only option, so it is interesting. I'm curious to see where her journey leads her at the end, towards the end of the season. But,
yeah, I think I think having Vernestra is helping bridge this gap between the golden age of the Jedi, which is supposed to be the High Republic era, and the downfall of the Jedi that we see in the prequels. And I think, without spoiling anything for any of the High Republic books, Vernestra is a very like bright, bushy-tailed, a very excited new Jedi at the time that we first see her. And so to see her become so much more stoic, I would say, a little bit more, I don't want to say strict, but is adhering to what she believes to be like the council guidelines and what's best for Jedi involvement. I'm like, obviously a lot has happened because, you know, a lot happens in the High Republic. A lot of trauma.
Ooh.
Yeah, you'll get there. You'll get there.
Oh, you're looking for a ride.
But yeah, I feel like the Acolyte has a unique and probably a difficult job trying to push us in the direction of where we know that the Jedi ends up, where they start to be more involved with politics more directly and being corrupted from the inside and from the outside. So I can see why they would pick someone like Vernestra as a character in the show. And I'm excited, nervous for her for the rest of the show, but that's okay.
True. Who's making it out after next week? I keep forgetting.
We don't know. That's like the scary thing is that all these characters are new. True. And I don't know where they're going to end up.
I guess we didn't even think about it, but fully. So you're prepared, because it seems like no one's warned you. There is a lot of tragedy and loss in the High Republic. Yeah. And I, now that I'm thinking about it, a lot of people have died on screen in The Acolyte, so they are keeping up with that.
Yeah. No, I mean, we can get into spoiler territory now, so if you haven't watched the episode, I don't know why you're listening to this, but anyway, spoiler territory. I was so shocked. I know I'm jumping way ahead to the end of episode 4. I was so shocked that they just fucking killed Kalnaka off. Like, immediately. Like, we barely saw him, and I was like, this is a Wookiee. Wookiees are sacred in Star Wars, and you're going to just kill him. Yeah. I was not. And I think that's why it was so surprising, because we've seen Chewbacca, like, make it through everything. There are other Wookiees that we've seen in Star Wars canon that have never been killed off before, at least to my knowledge, maybe in some other books or maybe legend stuff. But, like, I feel like Wookiees are so beloved in Star Wars that I didn't expect it. I'm so sad.
No, you're so right.
Yeah, I was really eating my words, because I think last week I was like, I think he's going to survive at least his episode, and then he'll die later on. And the way that they did it, too, like, it wasn't some big action sequence, which I think was intentional, right? Because we kind of got three different versions of these Jedi that are on the list dying. But just the way, like, you, I don't know about you guys, but there was no hope once I saw the, like, back of the chair. I was like,
yeah. Oh, no.
That was real horror vibes, the way that they, you know, the music goes quiet and he's, ugh, just poor Kalnaka. Yeah.
No, Brooke, I think you hit the nail on the head. I was like, why does this feel like such a deep blow? But it's the equivalent of, like, that online database, like, does the dog die for film and television? Like,
yeah.
We need one now. Like, does the Wookiee die?
We really do.
That's how it is. And Sawyer, you're so right. The circumstances of the discovery of his body, it too, you know, the crime scene, it doesn't look like there was even a struggle. Like, we're not privy to it happens off screen, but you kind of made a really good point. We see Undara, like, fight to the end. We see Toriman do the complete opposite. You know, he accepts his path out. For Kalnaka here, this almost looked more just like a straight execution. Like, he was already in his chair, just unsuspecting. Granted, you know, it wasn't May who took him out. He faced the wrath of you know who, but that's such a good point. I'm curious if he, similarly to Torben, didn't even try to put up a fight, perhaps. Like, I don't know, for a Wookiee going into that, I was like, maybe he'll be the first opponent that she can't beat. And then no, never mind.
But when we first see Kalnaka in that second episode, he's fighting off the guys that are, you know, infiltrating his space, like, and he had no hesitation there. So, I mean, of course, we don't fully know the circumstances surrounding who's going after them and why, but he didn't strike me as the type to just accept his fate. So I don't know, but I don't think we're gonna, the good news is I don't think we're gonna have to wait. I don't think it's gonna be like another flashback episode in between. I think we're going to go right into, I think the consensus from everyone I'm spoken to is this next episode is going to be called Night, because we had Day. So, and I do think that it is going to be like, you can stitch it together, those two episodes, and have them be like a cohesive story. So,
yeah.
But speaking of flashbacks, let's talk about episode 3, because it was certainly divisive on the internet, but I think that was some of the best Star Wars we've had in a really long time.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Amen. Men, I have to just tune out whatever is happening on the internet because I'm admittedly still very susceptible. Like I give a lot of weight to other people's words. So if somebody were really to look me in my face, or even a random person in my comment section saying, "This was awful. What are you talking about?" Like, I'm so, I believe, like, I have a tendency to just like absorb like a sponge. So I've had to just draw the line. I'm like, no, I agree, Sawyer. This is some of the coolest Star Wars I've ever seen. And I just can't let the whatever the divisiveness that's happening online, I can't let that infiltrate my favor towards it. Because I agree entirely. It was, I was living, I was on cloud nine, y'all.
Yeah, I was not expecting the episode to be entirely a flashback. I was kind of expecting more that we would get bits and pieces as this like mystery of what happened is unraveled. But I kind of like that we thought the show was going to be about like who's killing these Jedi, and then we find out in the very first scene of the show, it's Mei. And then the question is, oh, what happened during this big incident that caused Mei to seemingly die and Osha to be taken to the Jedi? And then in episode three, that's pretty much answered if we know what happened. Granted, we'll talk about it, I'm sure, more. We're only seeing it from one character's point of view, and there are pieces that are missing from the story, but it's still kind of like the question at least is answered a little bit. So now it's like the next mystery is who is the master? And I would be really intrigued to see if they're just gonna like reveal it to us. I don't know. I'm just like the back half of these episodes have to be crazy because, other than I think like the light whip that we haven't seen in the show yet, I think we've seen like pretty much everything that was in the trailers.
It's so, I'm curious to hear what you guys think. Perhaps I'm coming at this from this strange bias, but episode three, I find myself continuously gravitating towards like there was some wrongdoing on the Jedi's end that had something to do with the demise of the entirety of the Coven. And all right, I stand by this. I feel like they totally tampered with Osha's short-term memory. I could be wrong. I've never experienced a blazing fire, so it's totally plausible, I feel like, for a young child to have that trauma and to like black out and have the suppressed memory after something that horrific. But she seemingly had no head trauma and made it out unscathed, with soul, but then wakes up with no recollection of anything, but she saw it all with her own eyes. So I'm curious. I don't know. This is why I'm like, I need to talk to other people to see if I'm just biased and like I keep gravitating towards something about this show is driving me to see the Jedi in a different, mysterious, almost sinister light. Like they're not necessarily, I don't know. So I'm like, did they erase her memory so they could conveniently just plant the seed that Mei started a fire and ended the entirety of the coven? Like, I'm curious to see where you guys stand on the iffiness of the Jedi right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I generally think that I don't I if that is true, I don't believe that it was Sol's decision. I don't think he would have, because he obviously in this last episode that we got, he's like, we need to have a conversation and I'm gonna explain it to you. And I don't think if he was probably not like an active participant in that, if that was the choice. But Leslie Headland has mentioned, first of all, wanting to adapt Knights of the Old Republic, which is that's the first time we've heard that and ever. And she's brought up a lot of influences being characters and story elements from both KOTOR 1 and 2, and memory loss and manipulating memory is definitely something that the Jedi were doing a lot of in that time period in Legends. So I did not consider that before, but now that you brought it up,
Well,
certainly
thank you for
possible.
corroborating because I feel like I'm like, am I supposed to be driven to this point of I'm questioning the moral compass of the Jedi here? I don't, but that's that I'm learning something from you guys. I'm admittedly, I've not delved into it all. I need to freaking like play, Knights of the Old Republic and all of that. So I wasn't aware that that was something mischievous that they've formerly been known to tamper with.
Yeah, this whole incident, it just seems strange. Now, I will say a lot of people were maybe not happy with like the girls who were playing Mei and Osha's like performance, or that they didn't believe they would say things to each other like that. And I'm like, no, that is exactly how children talk to each other.
Sisters especially, I'm sure.
And that is exactly, siblings threaten to kill each other all the time. Like, those are very normal things. I'm around children a lot with my job, and that's how kids talk to each other. It's like not even like, oh, bad acting. That's just like kids are learning how to be little human beings. And so that's just like how they talk, you know? but I think like I believe that May, you know, maybe has a little bit going on and is a little bit indoctrinated by her mother and these witches. So I can believe of her maybe dropping, like actually starting the initial fire, but I don't believe that it like went to the whole fucking compound or whatever they were living on. I think there's a piece that we're missing there. I think May started it, but didn't, like, obviously it didn't grow just because of her. I don't know. I really don't have a strong opinion about the Jedi right now, because I feel like I just want to know. I'm so curious because, like, Master Torben would literally rather die than discuss what happened. So he was so traumatized by whatever happened that he was willing to just drink a poison and just be like, I'm out. So to me, I'm like, what the heck happened? Maybe, I don't know. I really have no theories at all. I would like to believe like the best in the Jedi, that they are, whatever happened, it was out of like something well-meaning, or that they were maybe manipulated by something. I don't know, because we also see all of the witches are just dead on the floor. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I interpreted that as they were poisoned, probably from the same tree, because they weren't like burned. There weren't like slash marks or anything. They were just like all laying, like they were just all on the ground.
Ooh,
you okay, are right. So that gives me either Jim Jones vibes.
Right. That's what I was. I literally said that. I said Jonestown.
I didn't even consider that. The Kool-Aid.
So that gives me like someone in the coven, or perhaps the master was leading the coven and we haven't seen that yet. Or that gives me one of the Jedi is the bad guy.
Oh, that would be so good. What if it's
and
Saul?
Listen,
what if it's Saul?
I can't believe that either. But if anyone has the range for that total 180, it's Lee Jung-jae.
I love Saul so much, and he's like such a little. I just want to like scoop him up. He's so amazing, and he's such a great. So what we've seen so far is like he cares so much. But that as a 180, you've heard it here first, folks. If this turns out to be true, I'm going to say that Yapsesh was the first people to suggest this idea.
No.
And I'm going to say that if that's the route that they go, first of all, it would definitely be executed in the most shocking and unsettling way, for sure. Uh-huh, secondly, not a single I will not entertain a single person who tries to tell me that this is bad writing. If that's like, it's not bad writing. This show is great. But like, if they pulled that off and it just totally swept the rug out from underneath us like that, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's so.
That would shock everyone.
I would never emotionally recover from that. Like,
That's worse. That is like, everybody is theorizing that he's going to die. That's worse. That would be worse. And it would be worse in the way. Yeah, it kind of does. I don't know. It would be like something that I just absolutely love about the High Republic is the villains and the way in which when you think they could not be more evil, they become more evil. And they're these villains, especially Marquion Rowe. He is the kind of villain that just makes you sick to your stomach when you're reading about the things that he does. And like, I want to see that on the screen.
Oh God. Oh, you know what? You guys, you guys touched on something in your episode recap for episodes 1 and 2, you know, in a lot of these theories and, you know, on Twitter, you know, people making commentary and predictions, there seems to be a lot of semi-obvious, for example, Chimere being this the strange figure, you know, that's conveniently there, you know, leading with May. But to me, like, I feel like that reads too obvious. Or I think you guys were touching on May and Osha being a dyad. Is that kind of like the obvious answer versus like, I do feel like there are a lot of things that are immediately like evident or more obvious, I guess. I don't like to use that word because that I feel like implies bad writing. But in reality, I think it just speaks more to the fact that as a fandom, we're all so in tune and we like to just exchange theories for a living. That's what we do between, you know, the weeks between episodes. But that would completely be for a show in which everything does seem like that might be too easy of an answer. That might be the obvious answer. Like that would be the total frick. You guys planted this in my head and now I'm not going to stop thinking about this because you wouldn't think.
Yeah, oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, you, please. I'm, like, brain blasted.
I was just going to say, I think that that's the point. I think that these, like, I've been on a couple different podcasts this week talking about these most recent episodes, and, like, it's, there. I have seen some talk online, like, I thought this was a mystery about who kills the Jedi, but we solved that immediately. I think, but they haven't stopped the marketing about solve the mystery. Like, it has to be a misdirect. Like these things that they're feeding us are so obvious, and then they're giving us so, which is why I think we're gonna find out who Darth Teeth is next week, because I don't think that's the mystery either. I don't think that's actually the master. I don't think that is the mastermind behind everything.
Yeah,
and I think, hell, what? Why does Sol have a vested interest in finding May? He doesn't. Like, he found Osha. If we really want to get into it, what does he gain from this? He solved the murders and now he wants May and Osha in the same place?
The only thing I could think is that he knows he's next on her target list, so he gets that threat off his back if she is apprehended and off the streets, you know, because she successfully, optics-wise, now here she is next to Kelnaka's dead body, for all they know, you know, she could get roped into that, you know, murder as well. That's the only thing I could think, but you're so right. Other than perhaps he too, as you said, you know, he explains to Osha, I'll tell you everything. We need to have a chat after all this is said and done. Like, unless he also has some bottled up remorse in regards to something, some of their collusion, whatever went down 16 years ago on Brendok, you're on to something. Why is he so vested in this?
It would just be so interesting to me to have someone like, kind of like Palpatine, living two lives. And it would be so interesting to see that he was like manipulating these two sisters the entire time. Because on one side, he's training one to be a Jedi. And on the other side, he's training the other to be like an assassin. I don't want to say Sith because we don't know really. Like, just because someone has a red lightsaber doesn't automatically make them a Sith. And I feel like there's so many red herrings, like Chimere. Everyone's like, oh, it's got to be him. Maybe he is the one maybe he is Darth Teeth, but I don't think that's the big bad. I don't think we've seen the big bad yet, unless we have, because it's Sol. People are going to be so mad at us for saying this, but we also don't know what happened to Mother Coral, because to my knowledge, I don't believe she was like in that pile of bodies, because Mother Anasea was by herself kind of somewhere. But she would definitely have a motive for wanting these four Jedi killed, because these were the four Jedi that she probably believes caused all of this harm on Brendok. But like, I don't know. I feel like that's also like too obvious of an answer.
And this, I feel all like speaks to your minds. You're so right, Brooke, about your earlier point. this show has given us so much to talk about. Like, yes, I agree. Andor was is quality, and it's one of my still favorite Star Wars shows if the live action works. But this show, there's so much for your mind to run wild. So it's like, I don't think we're crazy for thinking like this, because there are so many possibilities for the show. And like you guys have said, there's no finite, we don't know what the end point is. Obviously we know the events that precede this later on in Phantom Menace, but there's still 100 years to go between now and then. We don't know. Maybe that's why it's so open-ended. So our imaginations can just be like doing all these 360s and 180s to try to piece it together.
Yeah. You know what this reminds me of, though? Hans from Frozen, because maybe I'm an idiot, but the first time I saw Frozen, that was and I'm usually really good at predicting like twists in movies. Like my boyfriend showed me The Usual Suspects, and I picked out the twist. And then there was one other, I think it's a Kevin Costner movie that I can't remember the name of. But I picked him out. I was like, oh, he's probably the Russian spy. And then he turned out to be the Russian spy at the end. Like, I'm pretty good at it. I don't know why. When I saw Frozen, I did not suspect anything. And then so when they did the Hans reveal, I was like, whoa, that's crazy. I don't know. Just kind of.
Now I trust your judgment. Now I'm going to be listening intently to everything y'all say. I'm following your, follow your prediction.
Listen, all I have to say is that I thought Rey was related to Palpatine from The Force Awakens. And I still own the username at Rey Palpatine on Instagram. I have owned that username since early 2016.
Yeah, you got the receipts.
Yeah. So not that her name is Rey Skywalker. Her name is Rey Skywalker. Let's get that straight. But it's just, you know, I solved the mystery.
So maybe you guys are right. Holy smokes. I feel like,
listen, I don't see anybody else talking about this, so even if we are wrong, we're offering just something new.
So heartbroken. Yeah. Because I feel like he has been introduced and painted as, in my opinion, amongst the ranks of like Kanan Jarrus and Qui-Gon Jinn, some of the best Jedi to ever live, you know, true to the actual creed of what the tenets of the Jedi Order should be. And I think that's why they're both such likable, heartbreaking characters and losses. Spoilers, sorry. I don't know if your audience.
That's what would make it so good. And it would make a lot of sense why they would choose the actor that they did, because if you watched Squid Game, he is kind of painted as like the protagonist who is uncovering this, you know, capitalism, etc., these themes, and you rooting for him to like make it. And then you see him in The Acolyte and you're like, wow, I really liked him in Squid Game. I'm gonna really like him as a Jedi. Like, that's such a great pick for him to be a Jedi. And then bam, he's evil.
Also, his name means son.
Ah, I think we're onto something. I have a good feeling about this.
Oh my god.
Like a bad feeling, because I don't know. Do I want it to happen now? I just think it would be so good. It'd be such a good twist. As much as I love Soul, it would make me sad.
This is quickly becoming one of my favorite conversations we've ever had.
I did not think we were gonna dive into this. Like, no, that's in ways you're so right, Sawyer. That a death for him is nowhere near as tragic as that would be. Imagine the absolute audacity to just emotionally damage an entire fandom. Because I feel like one thing that's been pretty unanimous about the show is the gravitation towards Soul as a very likable, immediate out of the gate character, a very honorable, respectable Jedi. His overwhelming compassion, you know, you feel for him, even though I'm sensing something sinister, something questionable about the Jedi and his other three companions from Brendok. I still, no matter what, I'm like, I'm Soul Rider. How long did it take before, you know, Soul Patrol and Yord Horde and all of the, you know, everyone to unionize around them, like within the first two episodes premiering? Like, that would the audacity. Leslie, if you do this, respect. Like, that's bravo, brave. But it's like, see, anything could freaking happen. It's not out of the question. That's why I'm like, there's still so much which one you said, Brooke, I think you said the these latter half of the season is about to hit the fan. Like, yeah, you're so right. My God.
And you know what? Man. I stand by what I said. I don't know when or where I was when I said this, but the first time. But I stand by this thought that perhaps by episode 7, we're going to have these answers about what the Jedi think happened and what the Jedi think, like, in the present day of the show, what's going on. And then I think episode 8 would be a great opportunity for them to go back in time and go, actually, this is what really happened. And actually, this is the aftermath of that. And this is what's going on behind the scenes, because the Jedi can take some losses, but they ultimately have to come out thinking they're on top. And the Sith, if there are Sith, and we're pretty confident that Sith are involved here, the Sith also have to win, because they have to be perfectly set up to be infiltrating the Jedi for the Phantom Menace. And that's what this show was originally marketed as, or introduced as, is like a Sith infiltrating the Jedi. So I think it would work if we have the Jedi winning, solving the mystery, whatever they think this mystery is, but the last scene of the show is like Soul doing something that's like, gotcha, actually it's him.
And you can't spell solve without soul, just saying. You keep saying solve, I'm like, soul. Oh shoot, you got, now that I know your guys' predictability skills, I'm buying into this by the second, more and more by the second. Sawyer, yeah. I would love to hear, you were saying that episode 3, now that we're into spoiler discussion, you were saying that episode 3 was like peak Star Wars for you. I would love to hear you explain why.
I honestly, you know, when I do think there's truth to what I said a few minutes ago. Like, I do not go into new Star Wars projects expecting or even needing it to relate to other Star Wars projects. And I have been a day one fan of the High Republic. I bought Light of the Jedi when it first came out, the day it came out. And like, I have always known this era to be fresh and different. And I guess I have some expectations about what that entails just as an era. I'm just like Brooke, I'm pretty agreeable when it comes to new media. I'm just here for a good time. And I think the High Republic especially has, without spoiling it for you, I think that there has been a lot, there is a lot, especially in phase 2, there's a lot of discussion about other Force users, other people who are aware of the Force and interact with it in one way or another. You know, there's like a council of different clans of, you know, the Jedi and the Church of the Force, and there's all these different groups that are connected in the Force differently. And I love the Night Sisters, but to see a completely different faction of witches and really go in on their lore and introducing this concept of, oh, like, we were suffering and we created children, and these twins are probably made up of sinister dealings, but they're the saviors of this coven. They're the whole reason we're still here. And also, it's a society entirely of just women. You know, the Night Sisters do take advantage of the Night Brothers, but not what's happening here. And you know, there's some reference to them having to be in hiding. Where are they, an offshoot of a different group? What's going on there? You know, why are they in hiding? Why are they on this planet? Like, why are the Jedi also on Brendok? Like, what did the Jedi know about this group that led them to, you know, are they perhaps an offshoot of the big bads from the High Republic? I'm still hoping for that. You know, it's just the world building was so great. Down to the spice creams. Everybody on Twitter is making the spice creams because the recipe's been posted. Like, they just...
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. I think the Star Wars account posted a video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They also posted a recipe for Back to Tank root beer on my tweet.
I forgot about that. Oh my god. Wait, if you're listening and you have not seen, Sawyer tweeted out, what is your biggest like Star Wars intrusive thought? And Swagman, the official Star Wars account, quote tweeted it or responded underneath of it, and they said, back to tank water tastes like root beer.
And then under that, they posted a recipe from the Star Wars website.
So unhinged. That's amazing.
But anyway, like, just it did this, it kind of in the same way that I maybe don't love certain story elements from the Canto Bight of it all in The Last Jedi, but the actual world building of Canto Bight and Cantonica as a planet and how full of life the casino felt and the different types of people and different aliens we saw, like, it felt like watching episode 3, Destiny is called, right? It felt like the same kind of magical feeling I have when I walk into Batuu. Like, I'm here. I'm in Star Wars. This is a fully realized world full of life and full of people. And every single one of these people, even if I don't know their name, has a story. And we're getting this, you know, we often get so caught up and it's like, it's the Skywalker saga. It's about Anakin. It's about Luke. It's about Rey, whatever. But this is a giant universe with trillions of worlds and civilizations, and the Force exists everywhere, but everybody has a different interpretation of what it is and what it means and how it should be used. And I feel like that's something we don't get to see very often, and it just felt new and fresh. And I could talk to you about, I could use every euphemism or synonym in the world to explain that I just loved it. I thought it was so cool.
That makes me so happy. Oh, I just love, I could listen to you go off and talk about that with every euphemism there is to, it's just so great to hear you to say that, especially after, you know, the week it's been on the Twitterverse, X, whatever you want to call that platform. It's so refreshing to hear, because you put it perfectly. It's not like a tangible thing that you can describe, but just that feeling of immersion, like, yes, mm-hmm. This is Star Wars, which is something that is worth noting about this show. And it is, because it is so new, it had that challenge of bringing something to the screen that, you know, that uphill battle of we don't know who any of these people are, what any of this is. There's an inherent battle there in creating that connection that it is still part of the universe. And I felt that immediately. I feel the same way. I felt that immediately from episode 1. Like, I don't know who any of these people are, what any of this is, but this is Star Wars, baby. Like, I feel like, in my opinion, but I know that that's something that has been, you know, a struggle for some, making that connection still with this show. But I feel exactly the same way as you, Sawyer. Like, it's just that intrinsic something, that feeling. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I love that it's familiar but still fresh. You know, it feels like a lived in Star Wars world, which is, I think, why I love like the original trilogy so much, and why I love the sequel trilogy. Just like, from every planet we go to, everything looks like lived in, like grimy. Like, that's my favorite kind of Star Wars. So I think I didn't connect as much with the prequel trilogy, because the prequel was like, everything is like pristine because we're in these beautiful locations. We're here in the Galactic Senate. We're here on Naboo, and everything's like nice and like prestigious. And I guess we do get that with the High Republic, but with the Acolytes specifically, I feel like we're going to enough different planets and different places that we're still seeing that like grimy lived in world that is really resonates with me as what I view as like Star Wars. And I think that's why I love like Galaxy's Edge, because they really paid attention to those details and they're like, we're going to make this place look disgusting, but like in a Star Wars way.
I still have not been. I'm geeking out hearing you guys talk about it. I know, right? It's like a sin as a fan, but no, but like from everything I've seen about it and heard the, you know, Imagineers talking about it, it seems like that is that was the vibe and everything. So it's like, I can't wait. Sawyer, that was like, that's probably the best promotion that I've ever heard for Galaxy's Edge, that it just, when you step into Batuu, you just feel like you're in Star Wars, like, ah, I need to go. That was beautiful though. Beautiful to hear.
I think we've covered a lot of these last two episodes. I did want to ask you about what you all thought about May in episode 4, because up until this point, she seems very determined to complete her mission, complete her goal. And then we kind of see, I don't think it's a complete 180 switch. I think it's very believable to me that once you find out your sister, who you thought was dead, is alive again, is who you would convert your loyalty to. Because she says, like, you know, my loyalty is to Osha. And I just wanted to ask your thoughts on that change. Did you like it? Was it surprising? Do you think that she means what she says when she told that to Chimer?
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. Like, to me, it's 1,000% plausible that if you learn that any relative, any of your family members or loved ones, doesn't even have to be relation by blood, anyone that you've loved, that you've presumed dead for over a decade, for almost 20 freaking years, upon learning that they are alive, you would be doing something rash. You know, that messes with you. Like, I know there's like, you know, when you think of like a mental breakdown, that has like a negative connotation to it, but like that would cause you to have some sort of short circuiting. Like, you're, everything that you've known and been motivated by is suddenly switched in the blink of an eye. Like, I feel like that would, it's entirely reasonable and rational that somebody would then behave questionably or surprisingly, or like doing things that even they can't necessarily like explain why. But you said it perfectly. It just boils down to loyalty. And I also think too, I'm very fascinated by whatever their link is, this thread that, you know, Mother Anasea says was existent there between them before they were even born in the physical world. Like, I know twins, even in the real world, have some sort of very, you know, interesting connection that I can't speak to, obviously. So I want to hear from like actual twins. If there's any twins watching, please comment, tell us, unless I'm just speaking false things. But twins in our real world, or even in Star Wars, especially Osha and May, if they are a dyad or whatever this thread is that's tethering them, there's got to be especially strong feelings there, like a connection that you, part of you that you thought was dead has been born again. So I'm with you, Brooke. I believe it. I think entirely it's plausible for her to have snapped in a good way, you know, and like gone rogue from there.
Yeah, I don't, I'm on the fence about it personally. I do, it did feel very sudden to me, in a way that made me think that it was not quite a 180 switch, but more of a, I'm sick of Chimer's shit and I'm sick of being belittled and I feel like it's just important that I get my tasks done and I don't need to do it. Because she has said that in previous episodes, like, why can't I just do it my way? Like, the job is getting done. Why can't I just do it? Do I think she's 100% on board with the dark side? No. But I think there's like a clip from, I think there's a clip of her like grabbing Jackie or something from next week's episode. I don't know if it was a teaser or something. And so I think, to me, I was kind of going like, okay, yes, I do believe her when she says her loyalty is to her sister, but at the same time, she's also only known one thing her entire life, in the same way that Osha has only known her side of the story her entire life. So to me it was more like, I'll show him, I'm gonna like leave him in the dust and do it my way and then come back and prove myself. So I'm not fully convinced that she's like actually done with the master and everything. But that could just be because I saw that picture and I was like, oh, well, that doesn't strike me as my loyalties to my sister. But I
feel like she seems like someone who is in it for like herself only. So if she cares about Osha, that doesn't necessarily mean that she's going to start caring about all of the other Jedi that Osha's been surrounding herself with. May also knows nothing about any of these Jedi. She doesn't know. I don't even know if she knows that Osha joined the Jedi, because I think up until recently she thought that Osha was dead. So I feel like I don't think it's a 180 for her being like suddenly evil, for lack of a better word, to now all of a sudden she's like on the good side and wants to be a hero. I think she's like, nah, fuck this. You know, this isn't beneficial to me right now. I was also killing all of these Jedi because I thought my sister was dead. Now it turns out that she's not dead, and I'd rather go be with her. So yeah, I mean, and Kat, to your point of like there being some sort of tether that is keeping them together in some way reminded me a lot of the Force Dyad that we saw with Ben and Rey. And my initial thought, I don't know if I still believe this, but my initial thoughts after watching episode 3 was that Mother Anasea was able to create these a child of the Force, but just by pure luck, they got two that turned out to be a dyad. And this is just me theorizing, because we know that Palpatine this whole time has been trying to create this Force dyad because of how strong it is. And I think I don't know if it's put in canon or written anywhere, but what I took away is that a dyad is completely up to the Force. Like, you can't create it by force, not the Force. Like, the Force creates it. You can't force. There's not a better word. You know what I'm trying to say? You can't create it on your own. And so to me, well, I guess Palpatine or Plagueis or whoever the fuck is around at this time wouldn't know that. They would just see what happened from the outside, that this person was able to create children of the Force and that they're a dyad. And this gives him the idea to do it. I don't know if I completely believe that anymore after watching the 4th episode, but it's still like kind of lingering in my mind as maybe this is a connect. And I don't think the show needs to connect to the Skywalker saga, but it would be kind of an interesting thread that would kind of like give us a little more context into the return of Palpatine and the rise of Skywalker, which is a very divisive thing among Star Wars fans.
Right. Yeah, I think you guys touched on that in your episode 1 and 2 re-yap. I love, by the way, the repurposing. There's so many ways you can repurpose yap. Yap squad, re-yap. But I think you guys alluded to, like, perhaps Mei and Osha or the blueprint of sorts.
Yeah.
And I do agree with, I don't know what I would prefer, because I have been a fan who's been begging for something new that expands and transcends beyond the Skywalker saga. Mm-hmm. So I haven't even necessarily, I'm so worked up in trying to solve whatever is at hand that I haven't even considered whether I want it to somehow tie in or leave little seeds that then, you know, explain things down the line, or if it is its own standalone story and does have some impact, or perhaps is a blueprint, but then it's still removed enough that it's like, I don't know. You guys are making me consider, like, I didn't have any predictions for how this could go or how I would even want it to necessarily connect. But that would be interesting if there's some, mainly because there's so many questions and theorizing surrounding Mei and Osha, and what does this mean? You know, Anakin being conceived in similar fashion, you know, no father, like, what are the links there, if any? Granted, though, I'm team exactly what you were saying, Sawyer. Like, this is a massive freaking universe with trillions, gazillions of, you know, planets and whatnot, you know, not everything just because Omei and Osha have no father doesn't mean this is contending with or in any way, shape or form related to Anakin's, you know, conception at all. There's so many different things that could be at hand, especially since, you know, Anasaya and Mother Coral, when they were going at it, you know, Mother Coral to me insinuates, the subtext in her voice seemingly insinuates that the Jedi would be very much against the creation, the means in which Osha and Mei came to be. I don't think they would see it in a favorable light. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in terms of Palpatine, like, I don't think, I find it difficult to believe from everything I've seen Leslie Headland say about the inception of this show and the things we've seen so far. I find it difficult to believe. I think there has been some recent Star Wars media that has been created with the intention to buffer the choice to bring Palpatine back in the sequel trilogy. And I don't feel that way. I don't feel like that was a overarching goal of the Acolyte. But I do think that, you know, because they made this distinction between legends and canon, and we, you know, there is a lot of room to work in this era in which the Acolyte is taking place. What we have in legends that we don't yet have in canon are all of these Sith doings that were kind of compiled by Plagueis and compiled then later on by Palpatine and used as inspiration for their dealings, because in Legends all the Sith were trying to do was achieve immortality. That was Plagueis's main goal, and then Palpatine kind of right as Plagueis was about to figure it out, Palpatine killed him too early. Mm-hmm. So it while I don't necessarily think it should be like a driving point, like, oh, like this is what inspired Palpatine to go down this road, it would make sense. It would almost make less sense if that wasn't something that he drew upon later.
I feel like it's something that was not intentional. Like, they weren't like Leslie Headland wasn't writing that with that in mind. But she has been very vocal about all of the different inspirations from other aspects of Star Wars, including things like the Old Republic, that has influenced the Acolyte. So I can see maybe the idea of two characters being connected, because that is also something that we see in the Old Republic. And maybe, you know, drawing inspiration that we see from the prequels. I feel like it is a good, maybe a good basis that if other creatives wanted to utilize that in other media to create this connective tissue to Palpatine's return, I think maybe that's like where that would fit in. I don't think that it was like an intentional, oh, we need to connect this to the Skywalker saga. We need to connect this to how Palpatine returned. I just can't help but think that if we are dealing with the Sith, we know at least some of the background of the Sith, like behind what came before Palpatine, but we don't exactly know in canon how we got to that point. So if this is also going to be that thread, I feel like it's almost hard to separate, you know, from Palpatine and from the rest of the Skywalker saga, because it is so focused on the Sith being the main, you know, antagonist or bad guy. So I don't know, just my thoughts about that.
I'm curious. I'd love to hear from you guys, because when you know, after you boiled down the hype and the, I don't know, I don't want to speak for all of us here, but I thought that cliffhanger was very hype, very bold. I respect it. This week's episode. Also, Sawyer, I love your blanket. I just love the vibes. When you know, after you boil down all the hype of it all, and then question, though, the actual situation at hand, which is that this figure who, as you guys have suggested, does not necessarily, you know, the red saber does not have to denote it as a Sith entirely. But why do you guys think they would have revealed themselves now? Like, could they have sensed that May was giving up. I mean, if it is, you know, Chimere, she confessed her whole plan to him right then and there. So, you know, that's believable that there he is. He knows exactly what her intentions are and isn't then just going to snap into the game. But I'm curious, what, if anything, would the Sith gain from revealing themselves here, or this acolyte, whoever this is? Because I too don't think this person, whoever this is the big bad. I think there's still someone puppeteering behind the scenes, an overarching entity slash threat. Oh. But
obviously, Sol wants Darth Teeth to kill all these red shirt Jedi. It is so here.
Oh my god, it's all part of his master plan. This is why he brought them all here.
This is like tinfoil hat, like Darth Jar Jar Binks territory, but I believe it in my core now that we've talked about it so long that I'm like, might actually be disappointed if it doesn't turn out that way.
Listen, I just hope that someone, if we're right, I hope that someone from the production like watches this and is like sitting in their chair going like giddily, either really excited that we figured it out or
disturbed.
Like, no, I thought I had them. I thought I was going to trick everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, we just have to wait to find out. But I do agree. I don't think that this master or this, people are calling him Darth Teeth. I was calling him like Star Wars Ultron, 'cause he sounded a lot like James Spader to me.
Yeah.
In the first or second episode, whichever one he showed up in and started talking to May. Because we've seen this in Star Wars before, it just as soon as the Ahsoka show with Marok, that like Inquisitor guy, and then we were all like, oh my god, who is he? And then it turned out it was literally just smoke, you know, like a force creation. So I don't think that's what this is. I don't think it would be the same thing. But like, I don't know. There's so many red herrings in this show. And I feel like I did not watch Russian Doll, but that is also a show of Leslie Headland. And I know that it's very good. And it is a very like unraveled mystery type deal. And so she's very good at that kind of storytelling. So
now you're so right. I feel like it's become necessary viewing some of her other works in her repertoire to binge those and see.
I didn't know she did Russian Doll.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. But I've heard the same, that it is really, really good. So I'm beginning to feel now in the weeks waiting between episodes, perhaps that's what I have to do for investigative recon purposes to try to figure out.
Well, folks, that was riveting. I'm really excited. I'm like, I haven't been excited about Star Wars like this in a long time after this. This is a great convo. So yeah, Kat, thank you so much for coming.
You guys, I couldn't have said it better myself. Like my cheeks hurt from just smiling so much because I hope it doesn't come across as fake or like posed or anything like that. It's been pure joy, like hearing you guys, just hearing other people say what they love. It's about what we love, not what we hate, you know, Rose's famous quote.
No, but it's so true. And I've heard that phrase a lot this week. And I've also heard the "there are more of us" phrase a lot this week. And I have not felt that as strongly in the fandom as I have the past couple days, the way that the community seems to be banding together. And it makes me very proud to be a Star Wars fan.
That's why I always say I have to do it myself, get off the internet more and actually just mingle and talk and communicate with fans in real life, because it's so it's so much more invigorating, and it's just a great reminder. And you guys have the best vibe here. Thank you for this space and for letting me come on and talk about like the best episodes of this show so far. I'm so honored. Thank you so much.
Of course. Do you want to tell everybody where they can find you real quick?
Sure. Self promo. I, again, don't have a stage name. Catherine LaSalle is the name of my YouTube channel. All of my other links are some variation of at Kat LaSalle or Kat LaSalle2, I think, is Twitter, Instagram, and whatnot. I'm the same about TikTok. Whatever's happening on that app, follow me on there if you care. But it's still here. But and yes, I host with my husband Tom the Dork Discourse podcast on Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern. Perfect pregame for the Acolyte before they drop the episodes. So shameless plug over. Thank you.
Sweet. Yeah, we will put all of Kat's info and socials in our description so you can go and check those out. We will be back after episodes 5 and 6 for another re-yap. But until then, we will yap with y'all later.